Welcome to the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by the Funny Womax and Friends. If you're looking to get more out of your Shenandoah Valley experience, then this is the podcast for you. You'll meet interesting people, musicians, and comedians that perform here and find out more about what you can do and see. Whether you live here or plan to visit, listen to explore what makes our unique slice of heaven. Now here's your host, Don Davis Womack.
Hello, laughers. I'm thrilled to welcome back to our show the incredibly talented comedian Lachlan Patterson. Lachlan is originally from Vancouver and is now based in LA. He first captured our hearts with his unforgettable performance on NBC's Last Comic Standing. He's graced the stages of Fox's Punchline, Comedy Central's Tosh.0, and has been a recurring special guest on Fox's Legit. With over 20 years in the comedy business, his dry sarcasm and witty observational humor have made him a favorite on stages across the globe. Since his last appearance on our podcast, Lachlan has continued to make waves in the comedy scene and is now balancing his career with family life and fatherhood. We're excited to catch up with him today and find out what he's up to next. Welcome back to the show, Lachlan. It's great to have you on today.
Thank you. It's great to be back, Dawn.
I know, it's been a couple of years. I looked back, it was episode number 64 when we were an audio only podcast. So
what
now
episode
we
are
the,
you?
This one, it's gonna be in the 170s.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Right?
170 is a good episode. I like that.
Yeah, I think it'll be 170 something. Yeah. 170 something or other. That's where you'll be.
A lot should have happened since then for me.
I know. I would like to talk about that. What has happened in the last couple of years with you personally and professionally? Catch us up.
Sure. Well, I have been working on it. I think when I last saw you, I had just dropped an album. I want to 2024, 2022. No, I had an album out. I'm working on a new album. And so comedy-wise, I've toured a bunch. I got to open for some guys like Nate Bargatze, which was fun, in arenas. And that's Daniel amazing. Tosh, I got to go do join him for his Sweet Tea Southern tour.
That's great, too.
Yeah, and I brought my kid because our kids are the same age. So I got to bring my four-year-old at the time with me. And I took him out of preschool and just, you know, him and me just rolled on this tour together. He sat to the side. Daniel performs. He sells out these massive theaters.
Yeah.
And you walk out on stage and I look to my right. My kid's just sitting there on his tablet waiting for me. It was really great.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. On both of the tours, did he get to go with you to Nate's also?
No, not on Nate's. That was just me. Okay. Which was good because it's harder. Like, I still have a elbow injury from that tour with my son, just from carrying him through the airport all by myself. Like, when he was being not cooperative. You know, you're trying to, travel's hard enough for with two bags, but imagine two bags and a 40-pound kid. It was just too much for my arms. And so I'm still nursing that.
From a couple years ago.
But it was worth it. It was well worth it. Yeah, from a year ago.
Yeah, a year ago. So he's five or six now?
He's five now. Okay. And it's incredible. Yeah, it's just a great experience. He's just such a good kid. And, you know, I'm comparing him to all the other kids that are friends with him. I'm like, mine's the best. But I don't. Isn't that how it works?
That's the way it's supposed to be. That's right. Mm-hmm. Your kid is the best and it should be that way. I agree with that. Is he tall like you?
He's little, but he's awkward like me. You know, he's all just his limbs are just, I played a lot of sports as a kid. My dad was an athlete. His dad was an athlete. And, so my dad was my coach and everything. So even though I wasn't athletic, I have a lot of athletic experience and, I can see in him, he has that same body that I have, that gangly, tall body, but it's not developed yet. Big feet, you know?
Yeah.
Clumsy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Messy. Yeah. My son was a big and tall guy too. So that sounds very familiar.
Yeah,
more on the stocky side than the lanky side. But yeah, absolutely. Does he have a sense of humor like you? Do you see a budding comedian in this young man?
He wants to make me laugh a lot. And he gets me sometimes. And usually the joke is just kidding. That's the punchline for most of it. He'll just say something like, "Dad, I just poo-pooed all over the floor." And I go, "What?" And he goes, "Just kidding."
That's his consistent punchline.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
And he gets just me. I'm not expecting it, you know, but he's figured out that just kidding is it's a killer line.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I know a lot of comedians who use just kidding.
really?
Yeah. Just kidding is the structure of a lot of jokes, right? Even though you don't want to say just kidding on stage, I don't think.
No.
It hurts when people say just kidding because it's like, dude, we're here for a comedy show. Please don't disrespect me by thinking I don't know what a joke is and what isn't a joke. So I hate when a comedian says just kidding, of course, but in the structure, there is a just kidding like setup and punchline, right?
Right. Yeah.
So
I think I see where you're going with that.
Yeah. It's the math of it is say something. And then when they laugh, it's because they realize you were just kidding. A lot of my material is like that. Like, you know, of course, when someone says something offensive and you laugh, you're laughing because you know they're not serious.
Mm.
They're just kidding.
Mm. So he's got the basics down, is what you're saying.
Very, very. Exactly.
Yeah, he's only up from here. That's where he's going. How are you balancing fatherhood? That's new for you. You've been doing comedy 20 years. So this is relatively new, balancing family and fatherhood life with your comedy career. So how are you working that out?
I'm definitely spending a lot more time with him than, you know, that time was always filled with comedy for me. And so it's a bit of a sacrifice to be with him. And because I don't want to miss these years, I really don't. And I know one day it's going to be gone. You know, it's funny. I was thinking about it yesterday that one day he's going to think, I don't know anything, and he knows everything. It's going to be that day where, because I have that with my parents too. I don't think my parents are as smart as me anymore. You know, like I think at about 17, I think we would think we're smarter than our parents, something like that.
Yeah, right around in there before our forebrain comes on. Yeah.
Yeah. And at that point, he's going to disappear. And for, you know, I'm preparing to not see him for like 10 years, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if business slows down for me, like I'll always keep doing, I write every day. I'm always writing. But getting on a plane to go to another city to do comedy, my calendar is not as filled up as it used to be, because I want to be home with him and I want to see it all. My phone's just all day. I take pictures of him doing stuff. That's one of my favorite things to do. We took him to the Strawberry Festival. I don't know if you know, but Ventura is the strawberry capital of the country.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I didn't either. So I went to the Strawberry Festival here, which has very few strawberries.
For real?
Yeah. It's all rides and
all right.
And pizza and cheesecake, and there's guys selling cars and water filtration systems.
Very little. I thought they'd just be
like, you know, everything would be strawberry themed, but
yeah,
you know, roller coasters, Ferris wheels, cotton candy, and not even strawberry cotton candy, you know, and then on your way out, you can get a strawberry sundae or something like that. And they sell strawberry flavored beer, but come on. Come on, Strawberry Festival.
Come on. What's wrong with you? Pick it up.
Yes.
we need more berries.
Just theme. Like, it has like strawberry games, and I'm not in charge.
This is above your pay grade, I think.
But I took him.
Organization. Yeah.
Exactly. But I took him to the festival, and he got, and, you know, I got all the tickets. And sorry, I'm going through this so you can see. You know, we went to the. Here's the Strawberry Festival. You know what I mean? Like, it's just people walking around and.
Yeah.
And like, you know, you can see the, you know, it's just like a, it's like a state fair.
There you go. Was your first time?
That was my first time.
Okay. So you're enjoying all of this time right now while you have it before it goes away. Precious time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Once you spend it, you can't. Yep. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And they tend to put you to bed earlier too, the young kids.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Life changes.
Incredible.
Yeah.
And so I'm looking forward to when he's like, Dad, he goes off for 8 hours a day to school and wants to hang out with his friends after. Fine. I get it. At that point, I'll crank it back up. After working with Nate Bargatze and Daniel Tosh, you know, I have a fire to, you know, build a larger audience and share my comedy with more people, of course. So that will never extinguish.
Yeah. Yeah. This is just a different season in life. And you've had quite the career of 20 years in the comedy business. I'm wondering, if you had to do it all over again, what would you do differently?
Oh, wow. Yes. You know, when I first started, I almost feel like the mistakes I made, if I didn't make those mistakes, I wonder if I would be as far as I am. I don't know. I think I probably would have started working cleaner.
Mm.
I think that's something that I'm noticing has really been a challenge and something that has been made me more valuable, I think, as a comedian. I think as a young comedian, I saw a lot of my friends who were working very blue. And while you can do it, and some of my favorite comedians are blue, it's just a tougher journey, you know? You're opening yourself to a lot less shows and a lot less opportunities. So you better be twice as funny if you'd want to do that. And so if you can, you know, I've always found when I write a dirty joke or a joke with a, you know, foul language in it, I didn't do the one step further, which is, all right, I've already figured out that it's funny blue. How do I change a few words around and still make it funny? Make that. And so sometimes dirty jokes are just funny and, but I want to be able to tell them anywhere. And so sometimes it's just restructuring it a little bit, you know, maybe, you know, doing this or that. I work with a lot of young comedians. As a headliner, you're usually the format is two newer comedians go up before you. Mm-hmm. And whenever I'm sitting there, I'm reading the audience off these two. And a lot of times I have to sit through a lot of foul language, learning language, and wasted foul language too. The F-bomb, if used effectively, can be very funny. But if you're using it all the way up until the punchline, and then you use it in the punchline, it's kind of lost its energy, its surprise. And so just like every other word in your setup and punchline, you wouldn't use this, you know, if you're telling a joke about grapes, you'd save the punchline for the word grape. You wouldn't say grape throughout the whole thing. And people would be like, all right, we get it. It's grapes.
Yeah.
For some reason. Yeah. For some reason we let ourselves use, as young comedians a lot of times, the F-bomb unnecessarily or other words unnecessarily. And I would clean that up. I think that would have probably opened a lot more doors for me starting out. To say, hey, this guy's funny and he's clean.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up. Certainly when we go work out new material and we'll hit a mic in for that open mics. You see that a lot in the open mic arena, the foul language. And I feel like a lot of comics feel they can make a successful career going that route in the comedy club arenas and things like that. And so they continue to pursue that. And then you'll talk to them a few years down the line and they'll realize, well, I'll get more work if I work cleaner. So some of those blue comics will approach me. Can I come on your stage? I'll show you a clean set. So I need some clean videotape that I can send to Drybar or wherever they want to send it to get more work. It's interesting to watch people go through that journey and realize they can work more if they work clean more.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's good to hear that from someone more seasoned like you. Yeah. What were you going to say?
Yeah. Do you ever also, I noticed too, if you, that moment, a dirty comic gets offered an opportunity and they're excited about it. And then they say it has to be clean. The panic in that kid's face as he has to figure out if he actually can do that. And I've seen that in a lot of people. They're about to go on stage and they were told that they had to be clean and they're freaking out because they don't know if they can do it. And so that's a sad thing. That's a regret that they didn't prepare that way. And now they're being thrust into a very stressful situation where they're going to have to censor themselves throughout the whole experience. And they can't relax for a moment, or they might forget that one of their jokes, they usually throw 8 F-bombs in there and now they're like, So it is another thing too. If you're not prepared, you're going to get asked, can you do clean? I have a lot of dirty comedian friends who get asked to do clean and they're like, yeah, I can. But then when the lights go down and their show started, they're pacing. They don't really know if
they're going to be able to do it or not. Mm-hmm. And then people's definition of clean can vary too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we define ourselves as more edgy, clean, or PG-13 because we do work with blue comics that come on our stage and they tend to have a lot looser line on what clean is or isn't versus our comics that work clean exclusively all the time. And I think sometimes because they talk that way so frequently, their sensor on how they're really talking is a bit askew. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not hearing their foul language as often as they say it because they're used to talking that way in general. Yeah. And so thankfully we have had some really good experiences with people being able to make the transition. I typically have to, if I have never seen a perform clean or edgy clean before, then I need to see a tape or tell me where your show is and where you're doing clean to edgy clean and I'll come watch, you know, to see if they can actually do it before booking them on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's clean and then there's also church clean, which is.
Yeah. Church clean.
Church clean is another level that I also have trouble with. Gosh, I have to say gosh and golly. Don't say those words at home. But now I have a kid. it's, you know, when you have a kid, you got to work clean at home. So,
yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. You want to be a good influence. That's really great. Well, thanks for sharing all those things that you would do differently. I know one other thing you probably wished I did differently today.
What's that?
Well, that sends you some of this absurdly flavorful popcorn from our sponsor, Pre-Popstress.
What?
Ever had it?
Yeah. I haven't. You didn't send it to me. Is it good?
No, it is so good. I missed the mark on that. But you're going to get to try some when you come here in July for Cape Comedy Fest, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But I digress. Let me tell you a little bit of what you can look forward to with this popcorn.
Okay.
All right. This is Shenandoah Valley sourced. It means all their kernels are grown right here in the Shenandoah Valley. It's 100% nut-free factory. And nice. They just got the Virginia's finest trademark for having a top quality crafted specialty food, which is hard to get right here in the state of Virginia. These are all wonderful reasons for you to enjoy this popcorn when I get it to you when you come here.
They're just going to give it to me, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. It's so good.
I'll reach out to them.
You can tell. They'll be glad to give you some popcorn. They have all kinds of flavors, too.
What
sweet
flavor
and salty.
Is that?
This is the caramel flavor.
Ooh, of course.
It's very good. My favorite is the cheddar.
Oh, they got cheddar? That's a great idea.
They got cheddar. All kinds of different popcorns. Totally delicious. Perfect gift for any occasion. Literally anything. Birthdays, anniversaries, anything you can think of. And they give our laughers a 15% discount. Just use promo code LAUGH15 when you visit prepopstress.com today. That's PrePopstress.com. And you can grab some and join me munching on it on next week's episode. Because that's what's up. Back to you, Lachlan.
I'm gonna follow that.
I don't know. How can you?
Maybe Waterloo sparkling soda.
Did they pay you to say that?
Where's Waterloo? Is that near you?
I have no idea. What
does
it say?
That's up north. I think that's up in Michigan or something.
Mm. That is not near me. Not even close. What's the biggest change you've seen lately in the comedy scene at large, would you say?
Yes. I guess it's funny how comedy is just right behind music in a way, this way, that I've noticed that there's a lot more people going to see people because of how they look, as opposed to maybe how funny they are. And I might be wrong, but and I think it's from the cell phone, is this wonderful device that we've been given. People can generate a 2-minute funny clip, and that's enough to sell tickets. Used to be you had to be, you know, certified by the Tonight Show or a television show. And now you don't need any certification to be a comedian to sell tickets. I remember I never sold any tickets until I appeared on a show, Comedy Central's Live at Gotham. I was pretty much unmarketable. And then that little show where I did 5 minutes or whatever, professional network television.
Yeah.
Or cable television, I guess it was. That was a place where people went to get laughs, and they just like Dry Bar, it was a approved source of comedy. But now you don't really need an approved source to generate an audience. You can sell out an arena with very little material in your pocket, which is frightening.
That's kind of crazy. It is kind of frightening because you don't know what you're going to get exactly.
I feel bad for the audience. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, there's no guarantee. There's no, at least, yeah. But that being said, having done it so long, I feel like, I've seen a lot of different trends in this business. And one of the things that I always remind myself is that no matter what the trends are, what I love when I love to laugh, and I love, it feels so good when you, like, once, when a comedian gets you, you just,
yeah,
I mean, it's going and you're like, oh man, where you're like, stop it.
Yeah.
I know what that feeling is, and I want that feeling for everyone that comes to my show. And I remind myself that all that other stuff is just a distraction. All these trends to me are interesting. I it's like the news, I read the news, but does it affect me as much as it's affecting these people that are being written about? Not really. So this is all happening around me for the most part, because I'm very much just, from the day I started, chasing that laugh, that, the pursuit of that audience's pleasure. And so the trends maybe make things move faster or slower for me, but ultimately I think that it's going to go away, is what I'm saying. There's another thing going to happen. This, I think audiences are going to adapt to that, and we're going to see maybe gray-haired comedians will be hot again.
Let's hope that day comes soon. I don't know why I'm saying that. Oh, yes, I do.
Colin Quinn just released a special. Do you know Colin Quinn?
Yes.
Yes. I've been watching clips of it, and it's so good. I can't wait to watch the whole thing. Yeah.
I'll have to check that out. Yes. Us gray-haired people,
he gives us hope.
We give hope. We got some jokes too.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do. Speaking of, that's a great segue into this question. If somebody is getting into comedy for the first time, or they're just thinking about it, they haven't actually done anything yet, what advice would you give to somebody who's thinking about doing comedy? What would you recommend?
Don't do it. Don't do it, and not for the reason you think, because I'm like bitter.
Right.
Don't do it because, if you're thinking about doing it, you're not doing it. You're not going to do it. You really got to love it. Really, because that's ultimately the only thing that's going to keep you going is to love it. If you're thinking about doing comedy, what does thinking about it mean? Like, you just thinking about it?
Yeah. Maybe they're hesitant to take a class or go to an open mic or do something to take that next step to doing it. Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's either do it or don't do it now is my advice. Like, stop floating the idea around and make a commitment to a class or an open mic or something. Just stop thinking about it, because there's just by thinking about it, know that you're in a class of a billion, right? There's a billion of you people doing the exact same thing as you right now and getting nowhere. So, and wasting their time. And some of them come up to me and them after shows and say, hey, I was thinking about doing it. And when people say that to me, I'm like, but you're not doing it. So what? I've wasted so much of my energy trying to help people who are thinking about doing comedy who give up. And then, so I've seen it so many times that you really need to have a love for stand-up comedy, I think, to survive. Because you're not going to get paid. you know, if you love carpentry, you can get paid. It's a great thing to love. You don't even have to love carpentry and you can get paid. But if you don't love comedy, it'll never work, because it's going to be, you're going to be doing it for free. People are going to be, you know, even I've been doing it 25 years and I get an email or a text. Hey, can you do my show, which is an hour away from your house tonight? Can you just pop by? You know, like, you know, after 25 years, you'd think you deserve maybe a week's notice before a show.
So
the disrespect never ends in this business. You'll constantly be underlooked and overlooked. And so the only thing that keeps me focused through all of the struggle that is comedy is that I love it. That's the only thing. Other than that, it's a horrible business. It's run by idiots who don't know what's funny. And the trends are based on things that have nothing to do with funny. And so you're thrust into this world and it's like, you know, you have to be hypervigilant to just do it for the intentions you have love. Otherwise, there's a lot of guys that don't love it and they're miserable and they don't last. And so if you're thinking about it, don't do it.
Got it. There are struggles in this business for sure. And I don't have as many years of experience as you do, but charting your own path in what wasn't a market here when we started stand-up comedy, and now to see other comics, local comics, starting to produce shows here, you know, that's since 2018. So that's what, 7 years? Not even quite 7 years in the making. It's definitely been it's been the love of the craft that's kept me going. Good. To your point. Yeah. I think you do have to love it.
So I was in Vancouver and I was opening for Nate Bargatze at Rogers Arena and he sold it out, 20,000 people. And I was going up, I went up before him and did, I don't know, 10 minutes or 12. I think he gave me 12 minutes and it was awesome. It was incredible. Yeah. I mean, the next day people were walking up to me on the street going, I saw you last night. Like the whole city saw the show.
That's amazing.
It was really cool. And that next night I still, you know, I went and did an open mic for 17 people. And it was equally amazing. I got to try some new stuff that I chickened out on in the arena. And I had a great response from the audience. That's the thing. A new bit can, it's like, for me, that's, it cures cancer. A new bit, like it just changes, it makes your life better.
Yeah.
And so when you try a new bit and it works, it's the best thing in comedy, I think.
I think so too. For the comics that are now working, they're actually getting some, they've done the free work. Now they're starting to get paid sometimes. You know, they're called a road comic or a working comic. What advice would you give them to propel their career as far as possible? What's like the one thing they can do that would make the biggest difference in developing as a stand-up comic?
As a headliner, or is it just a
working comic, you know, even those that are just doing feature right now and sometimes headline or they're at feature status, like they're working though.
Yeah.
What would be the single thing they could do that would propel them the farthest?
I think you want to maybe get, I would just, one of the things that I think helped me a lot was getting invited to festivals. A lot of these festivals have submission opportunities, I think most of them. And submitting to festivals really helped me a lot because it got me in front of agents, managers, and industry people that were able to propelled me to get more venues, more bookings. And it also connected me with other comedians and in a town that we were all strangers to, and we would all bond and share, and you get to see kind of a lot more. It's almost like a conference. You get to see the level of the comedy being, you see comedians that you never usually get to see. And yeah, my first festival was the Halifax Comedy Festival. And that was the first time I got to do a theater, and then they put it on television in Canada. And from that, I got invited to the Montreal Comedy Festival, which I met my manager at, who brought me to the United States. And from there, I was able to do a television show in the United States. And
there, you got all the connections and the early part of your career from doing that. That's good advice. Yeah.
Met Nate Bargatze at the Bridgetown Comedy Festival. That's where we met in Portland, Oregon, and didn't really, you know, he was like me. He was just a young comic grinding. Mm. But and then the next time I saw him, he said, you should come open for me. I'd love you to come and see my side. And it wouldn't have happened if I didn't do the festival with him. It would have been, hey, I'm Nate Bargatze. It's nice to meet you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Instead, because he already knew me from the festival, it was, hey, old friend, you want to come hang out?
Exactly.
So, nothing to submit. You can literally just type in the word comedy festival on your computer and find a city that you think would be interesting and try to find a festival that you think might enjoy your comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that's a great way for a road comic to spread their wings. And because when you're on the road, you're alone. It's a very mm-hmm. lonesome thing. Festivals are not. Festivals are very social.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the festivals, they only cover the nighttime for things to do for comedians. They're like, you're from 7:15, we're going to, until 7:45, we need you. And the rest of the time, just walk around the city. And so,
yeah. Yeah. That's a great way to make connections.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I didn't realize that you knew Nate from years earlier. And yeah, so he already knew you.
Yeah. He actually said to me, George Foreman Grill. I remember. Yeah, it's funny. George Foreman Grill. It's a funny bit. And I said,
go ahead.
Sometimes you'll have a joke that's so, I don't know. It just becomes the joke that is you. And people will come up to you and go, hey, George Foreman guy.
Yeah. So they remember you by your joke, the George Foreman Grill, which is one of the ones that we talked about when you were first on the podcast. So listeners, you'll have to, or laughers, you'll have to go back to that episode and hear that story for sure. Episode 64 is we brought him on the podcast then because he came here a couple of years ago to do the first ever comedy shows inside an actual cave here in Harrisonburg at Melrose Caverns. And we felt that not enough people got to see and experience your comedy in that inaugural year with us doing something so new and so different. And we've tweaked it, and we've got a lot of exciting stuff in store for the laughers that come to this amazing one-day festival with you and my husband and myself, bringing the laughs in the cave. With full cave tours where they can see the over 150 signatures of the Civil War soldiers, that both Union and Confederate soldiers that use those caves to store ammunitions. Now we're going to even have a brewery coming on this year, Friendly Fermenter, who's going to do a theme beer for us called Munitions because they did that in the cave. And we have axe throwing, and we have live music, and we have a food and beverage garden with wine and beer and popcorn and food from Ott Street Eats and games and activities and lots of cool stuff happening. We can't wait for you to come back to check out how it's evolved over these couple years. But we want to know from you, what are you looking forward to the most about coming back to Harrisonburg?
Oh, I mean, that warm weather, I've really enjoyed that. For some reason, it's just so nice on that. Is that a farm? Is the cave on a farm?
It's like incredible. A farm, yeah.
I just love the vibe of the whole thing and just walking around. Because I remember, did we do two shows a night?
Yeah.
Between shows, I remember just walking around and meeting all the people and listening to the music and axe throwing. I mean, I love the axe throwing. If you're gonna, I don't know if you're gonna have that again.
We are gonna have the axe throwing trailer out there.
The cave tours are incredible. I mean, that to me, this my favorite part is that performing in a cave. It's a once in a lifetime opportunity, and I love, you know, maybe I don't sell out arenas, but I've done a lot of, you know, shows that only I, in a lot of cases, or I'm the first ever of. I get to say I'm one of the first comedians to perform in a cave. Do I get to say that?
You get to say that. That's crazy. We can't find it anywhere else. So go ahead.
I was also the first comedian to perform in a licensed marijuana lounge.
Okay.
Like a legal. I was the first one of the first comedians to legally smoke on stage.
There you go.
That was
in California.
That was in Alaska.
Alaska. Okay.
Anyway, a bunch of little. I get to perform. I remember performing for 7 people last year. At a house party for 7 people, like they were behind a table.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
It was these poor people, they were stuck there, and there was like 8, there's more comics performing than there were people watching.
And
in the middle of the people was Edward Norton. He was stuck there in the middle.
Really?
And he couldn't. Yeah. So Edward Norton had to listen, and some of the comedians were so filthy. It was incredible. Oh. And I was just, I get to say, you know, I pretty much performed for Edward Norton's dinner party. And it was horrible, but, you know, it's a memory. I have memories of performing in front of Anthony Kiedis from the Red Hot Chili Peppers. And like, I remember Adam Sandler coming in once, and I heard he asked who I was, which was cool. Like, I have all these special memories, and the cave is one of them for sure.
Yeah, I know. We're so excited. We're going to add a little mini cave tour to the comedy show ticket this year. So when people are walking in toward the cave, part of the cave where we do the comedy show, they're going to learn about a little bit about the cave on the way in.
That'll help us.
Yes, it will. And they're allowed to bring bar comedy. And they're allowed to bring their beverages inside the cave for the show as well. So along with Friendly's, yes, it is nice. Along with Friendly Fermenter, we're gonna have Restless Moons Brewing, and also Bricks and Columns Vineyard will be there with us that day. So we're super excited about this. And I'm super excited about you coming back. And I just love finding out more about you. And I went on IMDb today. I peeped your IMDb and I was checking out some of the things that you've done. And I did not know that you were on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno.
Yeah, I was.
That was pretty crazy. Yeah. And then and then interestingly enough, I saw you were on an episode of Martha Stewart's show. And that was also different.
So get this. That's not me.
Oh, that's not.
There's another Lachlan Patterson.
Okay.
Who is a chef. And for some reason, this poor guy.
They put that on there.
I get his credit.
Okay.
I don't think he cares. I don't think he minds.
But okay, that answers my question. How did you get that gig? You didn't. How did you get on the Jay Leno show? This was earlier on in your career where it did make a difference getting on the Tonight Show. So walk us through, how did you get on the Tonight Show?
Yes. Well, I was a young comic performing at the Comedy Magic Club a lot in Hermosa Beach. And Richard Barrett, who manages it, who's incredible, and Mike Lacey runs it. They've both been so supportive of my career. Oh, I got a text message from Richard or an email. I can't remember. It was a long time ago. And he goes, the Tonight Show people are coming down to look at one of the guys, Finesse Mitchell, who's been on Saturday Night Live, and he's going to do a Tonight Show, and they're coming down to just approve his set. He's already been picked. They're just going to come approve his set. I told them about you. Do you want to come down and do a set right after him? And so I went, and I had a set right after him. And they came back after my set, and they said, we really like you. We'd love you to do the Tonight Show. And we just don't have a date for you yet. And I was like, great. I'm done. I'm happy with that. At that time in my career, I didn't even have the business know-how to go, well, I need a date. You know, I didn't even say that. I just said, all right, my calendar is open to the Tonight Show. And I remember it was like, I think it was a week later, I want to say, I got a text message. I'm in court. I was in court disputing a ticket for speeding or something. And they were about to call me up to say, do I plead guilty or not guilty? And I got a text saying, can you come do the Tonight Show tonight?
And, oh, wow.
Yeah. Can we send a driver to pick you up in, 4 hours?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And I said, yes. And I walked up to and they called Lachlan Patterson. Do you plead guilty or not guilty? I was like, guilty. And I just got out of there and paid my fine. And, and I got my outfit. I already had my outfit because at the time I was wearing this. I had almost like a uniform. I had a set outfit. I would wear a shirt and tie with a hoodie. Anyway. I had the set already memorized, and car came and picked me up, and went over there, and I remember Mark Wahlberg was on the show, and he said, he walked by me, and they were nice enough to say, Mark Wahlberg, it's Lachlan Patterson. He's going to be on the show with you today. And Mark walked by and he said, stay out of trouble. And then he walked right by me and he went to do whatever.
Stay out of trouble.
He was filming. Yeah. He was walking off the show as I was walking on. And he goes, that was the advice he gave. The life advice he gave me was stay out of trouble.
It's good advice. Yeah.
Yeah. And coming from him, learning about his career, I it makes sense for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So they tell me I'm going to do panel, which is you're going to sit down with Jay and he's going to lob you one. And this is what you're going to say. And it was something that I had pre-written with them. And I was like, great. And then there's a guy that just stands next to me before I go on stage. And he's got a little headphone. And he goes, right before I go on, he goes, you're not going to do panel. Have a good set. And I walked out. And I did my set. Mm-hmm. And for me at that time in my life, I think the set was good. By today, my standards today, and probably most people's standards, it was okay. But at the time, I thought I did fantastic, and I was very proud of myself. And I think I got a couple of applause breaks. And you know, met Jay Leno, which was really cool. And it was a, I mean, that was it. For me, that experience was the biggest one because that was the one that my dad saw. And that was the day that my dad stopped asking me when I'm going to get a job.
Okay. Yeah. That was the day he stopped.
Yeah, that was once he saw me on the Tonight Show. I think my dad said, "Okay, my son's doesn't need me to tell him to. He needs to get a real job."
Right,
that was a big one.
Working, yeah,
yeah. So for me, that was huge. That's my dad's way of saying, by not saying anything, I knew he was proud of me.
Yeah,
and so when he stopped saying, "When are you going to get a job?" I was like, this is all right. I'll take that as I'm proud of you.
Yeah, you're making it. Yeah, that's right. I'm proud of you. That's a milestone.
Love you. Don't love you too, Dad.
Dad's setting the bar high for you. That's good though. Yeah. And you made it to the Tonight Show. So you didn't have the panel afterwards, but you still got to meet Jay Leno that night.
Yep. He was really kind, and he came back to my green room where I had my girlfriend at the time and her two friends. I didn't want to invite anybody because I was so nervous. So I just I said, "You invite whoever you want," and we all hopped in the car and they just took over the green room. It was their green room.
And
Jay was like, "Do you need a little time to to get ready?" And I was like, it's fine. I had prepared the set. It was ready to go. In fact, I wanted to get rid of that set because I wanted to put that set to bed. So them calling me a week later was awesome.
Yeah. So you knew that set you were going to do if you got the Jay Leno.
Yeah. Show. If they had texted me in a year though, I've been so mad because that set's terrible now, like a year after.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all in a different place and it's punched up and it looks different and can sound a lot different depending on what you've done with it. So I know that. Speaking of which, has your writing process changed a lot over the years or has it been pretty consistent for you in terms of what your writing process? Yes. Talk to us about that a little bit.
It hasn't changed at all. I mean, I now have a computer and a phone, so I can put stuff in those too. But for the most part, I've been putting everything in a notepad this big. I carry this in my pocket. And then when it's time to write, I go to a full size and I take the ideas in here and write long form in here, and then I take a little thing like this and I write down the bullet points and I bring it on stage and try it out, and then I record it on here and I listen back to it on the drive home and I write it back in here.
That's pretty consistent,
but yeah,
it's all right there too. Yeah. I didn't ask him to prepare that, Laffers. He just whipped them all right up there.
I'm at my desk right now, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. That's
so the idea is that I'll think of something, right? And I don't want to lose that thought. And that's why I have the little notepad, is because sometimes, you don't have time to, you can't remember it, but it's usually just a little thing. And that little thing is like, what did I write down? Something like, whisper fights. I wrote down the word whisper fights. Right. That's all I wrote. Yeah. But it's what you have when you have a kid. It's how you fight when your kid's asleep. And,
it's true.
Right. So
it's 100% true.
Right? I didn't tell you that. You told me that. You were
You did. You said you were going to do it.
You said you were going to do it.
That's right.
And So from there, I would go into my long form book, I haven't yet, and write down page after page after page after page after page, and just trying to figure out what makes me, what do I enjoy most about this setup? And then try it out on stage. And then based on the reaction, so I listen back, I record it based on the reactions I'm hearing in the in my phone, I can then translate back to my book what worked, what didn't work, and where to focus my attention. Because the audience chooses the path with me. I can't force a joke. If the audience laughs at the wrong part, don't change the joke. Just go to the part that they laughed at. That's, you thought this was funny, but that's funny. That's not, don't force the thing you thought was funny. They think that's funny. Why do they think that's funny? Isn't that funny?
They obviously thought it was. They
figure out why that was funny. Yeah. They're not stupid.
Yeah.
So
they saw it. Do you feel like a lot of your stuff that you write gets discarded or not used at all?
Definitely.
Would you say that's accurate?
I would say 80%.
Yeah. That's what I hear from the seasoned comics will say. Throw a bunch of it out. Yeah, I know. All those dead, sad jokes.
Even ones that work. You'll throw I don't know.
Yeah.
Even if it works, people will be like, hey, how come you don't do that joke anymore about the thing? And we're in my head, I'll be like, cause I just don't like telling it. I don't enjoy it as much as you. I have a joke about how when you go to war, they're always wearing a different uniform. Did I do this down there?
I'm not sure if you did. Remember that one.
But like, you go to war because two sides can't agree on anything, but they surely they agreed on what to wear. And
yeah,
because you never see a war with two sides wearing the same thing. And so I tried to create that moment where these two sides are having this argument over that's leading to war, but somehow coming to agreement, like, we're going to wear green shirts. All right. Okay. And we're going to have a brown belt. And the other side's like, all right, our helmets are going to be like, you know, they're going to flare out a little bit. All right. So
be ready for that.
Yeah. And people are like, that's a really good joke. And I'm tired of trying to explain it. And
yeah.
I don't think it's, it also doesn't, I'm not a war buff. I'm not a, I'm not a war guy. So I don't know if I want to talk about
more
war.
True to you. Yeah, exactly. I get it. I think that is where the best comedy gold for individual comics is found, is in their own unique funny, their own unique comedic voice, because they're the only one who's really looking at it in that particular way, because there can only be that one individual. There would be no copy of you. There's only one you. So the more the funny in you that comes out, the rest of us enjoy the crap out of that. Yeah. Because no one else can say that joke like you can. You
that's
know?
The great thing about it, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
We
to
all,
me, that's
all thing, but.
Yeah. Yeah. And we see that with comics around here. Local comic scene is growing, and you just get excited when, just like when you see the headliners whose names we all recognize, you see them and you start hearing them say their setup, and you know it's one of their jokes that you really love. And you're just can't wait to hear it, because you know no one else can deliver that joke but that person. And it's just a gift. Yeah.
Yeah. I think a good advice to a young writer is, don't write what you think they'll laugh at so much as what you think you find funny. Like, it, I know you want to get a laugh,
right,
but it has to be unique to you, I think.
Yes.
Otherwise, you're just toeing the line. You're just You know, we all have a joke about how, you know, just don't have hump the chair. I think we can all agree no more jokes humping the chair. They've all been done.
I think it's been covered. Yeah,
we covered humping the chair. But also, don't listen to anyone's advice, including mine. I don't know what I'm talking about.
I think you know a few things. What's new as we're closing in on the wrapping up? What's new for you on the horizon other than coming back to see us all the way from LA here in little old Harrisonburg? What else is new on the horizon for you?
I'm going up to BC, British Columbia, for a West Coast tour. And I rented an RV and I'm bringing the whole family with me.
So oh, that's great.
I'm going to start in Victoria next month. And you can follow me at Lockjaw. And I posted this little tour. I'm going to do the islands around British Columbia, Victoria, I think Gabriola and Pender Island, where my parents live. I'm performing on the island where my parents live. Yes, in a pig farm.
Oh, that's going to be great. Yeah.
And I'm very excited. It's an outdoor show, and they bring the whole island for it. It'll be very busy, and I think they have axe throwing there too. But
oh, great!
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Yeah, now you're incorporating your family on the tour.
I've taken them on a lot of trips. I took them to New York for shows. I took them to. They don't travel as much. That's why we're doing the RV, because flying is just a little too much for my daddy's getting up there. Mm-hmm. But I've taken them to see a lot of my shows, which is fun because they saw me. They have to put up with me for so long. And a lot of the jokes are about them, which is I make sure to cater some of them so that I do a few just for them.
Yeah. Yeah, I like to do that when family shows up too. Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
They love it.
It personalizes it and they can laugh about it later with you. Makes it really nice. As we wrap up here, how can the laughers stay updated with you on social media or otherwise?
Yeah, they can go to that little word right there below my name, at Lockjaw, and they can find me on Twitter, Instagram. And not Twitter, what's it called now? X, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. And they can go to LachlanPatterson.com to see all my show dates and see if I'm going to be in a neighborhood near them, near you. Or they can call this number right now. I'm going to put a number right here.
Am I going to put a number? Right there. Okay.
Call this number. No, that's my kid. Right there.
Ah, it's so cute. Yes. Okay. Well, we'll double check that number and put that in the show notes for you as well, if he really gives it to me. But for sure, we'll put his social media handles and website and all that information for you in the show notes as well, Laffer. So if you're working out or driving, please stay safe. You can grab that information when you are parked and still. And thank you, Lachlan, for coming on the show and sharing all the things Lockjaw comedy with us. This has been super fun, and we are so stoked about you coming back to Harrisonburg and to the Shenandoah Valley. Thanks again, Lachlan, for coming on today.
Thanks, Dawn. See you soon.
Yeah. Yes, you will see us soon. And laughers, you can see Lachlan perform live inside the cave at Melrose Caverns for Cave Comedy Fest on July 27th this summer. For more info and to buy tickets, visit melrosecaverns.com or thefunnywomax.com today. Also, we want to thank you, laughers, for tuning in to today's episode of the Virginia is for Laughers podcast. When you give this podcast a like, share, and subscribe, it helps helps us grow. And we thank you so much for that too. Also, don't forget that discount on Prepopsterous using promo code LAUGH15 when you visit prepopsterous.com. And then that way, like I said, you can munch on it when you join me on next week's episode. And lastly, and most importantly, thanks for tuning in, laughers. Out of all the podcasts out there, you picked us, and we think that's pretty darn special, just like you. Until next time, keep smiling. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by the Funny Womack and Friends. We'll be dropping a new podcast every Wednesday, so check back for another uplifting episode. Come to a FWAF show or let us bring one to you. To find out more, head to thefunnywomacks.com. Be sure to share this podcast with a friend, and until next time, cheers.